Good evening. Welcome to Cafe Lena. I would wish you all to know that you are being addressed by the effervescent, irrepressible toast of Cafe Lena Society.
A long, long time ago, I can still remember how that music used to make me smile.
What stands out for me about Cafe Lena is that it is an authentic, homemade kind of ethos that creates friendships, that's relaxing, that brings people back to their basic values, and that to me is tremendously valuable in a world that's moving so quickly.
Every paper I deliver, bad news on the doorstep, I couldn't take one more step.
Lena Spencer was this wonderful woman who opened her doors to artists who needed a place to play.
Something touched me deep inside.
The day the music died.
Saratoga Springs was an old Victorian town where, nestled in the foothills of the Adirondack Mountains, about 30 miles from Vermont, where the Battle of Saratoga was fought, the turning point of the Revolution.
Settled by the wealthy people because of the baths, the spa baths, and those were introduced to Sir William Johnson back in the Revolutionary War era. The baths made Saratoga quite famous all along, and they, if you look at Broadway, you can see the Adelphi Hotel on one side. It used to be lined with hotels, and people would come there, wealthy people would come there, and there was a season. It was quite structured, and around the turn of the century, and perhaps before and a little after.
Saratoga was America's most important resort town, or one of two or three, from about 1802 until sometime in the 1920s or 30s. During World War II, it just ended completely. And then in 1950, they cracked down on gambling, which had been going on, not legally, but it had been going on for years, and everyone knew it was here. So I would say from 1950 to about 1960, this town was desperate. It was run down. It was poor. There were no jobs. The houses were in bad shape. Most of Broadway was either dingy or the stores were empty. It was not a good time.
It is not surprising that it would give rise to a place like the Cafe Lena, because it was a comfortable, homey family, very easy, slow-paced community, and it was very accommodating and very, very artsy. The area was always well known for arts. And it's not surprising that Lena Spencer was able to establish a community back then.
It was started in 1960. There was a folk music revival starting in the 1950s.
It was also the time of the Hootenanny on TV. It was the time of Peter, Paul, and Mary, and it was a time when folk music became popular, actually, which was surprising because it had never been popular in those terms before. It had been in people's homes. It had been regional. It had been southern, a lot of southern music. In the Northeast, it was a fiddle tunes and dance music, and there were a lot of contra dances, a lot of dances going on in New England, but not so many in New York.
It came out of the 60s. The whole coffee house concept came out of the 60s. It probably originated with the beatniks in the late 50s or the mid-50s in Greenwich Village and spread around the country, and then evolved into the coffee house scene of later years, because there was still a lot of smoking, there was still music, there was still poetry, but it became more a music venue than a way of spreading music rather than poetry, although there was some.
In his clothes befitting orphans of the alleys and the docks, the hours we spent.
From Lena, she came here in, I think, 1959 to look for a place to have a cafe. And her husband was a sculptor, and I don't think he made much money. She worked in Boston.
And you could see without really looking, he'd been down every dead end street.
They came and they found this place, which had been used by a carpenter to make moldings. There were machines and they had wood, and it was just very rough. And on May 21st, 1960, they opened it. And they had their first show, and in those days, Skidmore College was within a few hundred feet of here. So the students came in great numbers, and the cafe grew. And about 2 years later, Bill Spencer ran off with a Skidmore student and left Lena to run the cafe by herself.
And as he told his story,
and also she started a theater, which was in the other half, and that was probably about a year after she opened the cafe, she started.
She was Italian. She was the youngest of, I think she had 10 or 11 older brothers, and she was the youngest. And, you know, there isn't a lot of freedom of movement for the youngest girl and with all the... She really chafed against it. At one time, she ran away to New York City, and she got a job as a waitress. And she was there for a while, I guess, and then one day, one of her uncles came in and... basically hustled her back to Milford, which, and that was the end of her little bit of freedom. And her father and mother had started a restaurant in Milford, and Lena was a waitress, and she learned a lot about public service in terms of, you know, waitressing, and what does the public want, and what could she tolerate, and she knew very well how much work it was. And but she came over here with Bill wanting to open. I think she was emulating what she found in Greenwich Village when she went to New York that time.
I'm still at the door, and I'm chilled to the core. Lena, darling, baby, take me back once more. Out in the snow, and I'm shivering so. My strings are rattling in the breezes that blow. Now, Lena, be nice.
What kind of woman was she? She was actually very independent. Very stubborn. Everybody was always giving her ideas about what she should do, and she didn't want to do any of that. She did what she was going to do. She was true to her own thing till the end.
Lena, Lena.
She was somebody who was very good at finding talented young people who really wanted to be folk singers, and was a very warm and generous person, and so supported a lot of young people who were just beginning their careers as folk musicians. And a number of those people went on to become very famous, like Bob Dylan and Nancy Griffith and Christine Lavin and a lot of people like that, who at one point kind of played here very early in their careers, or who lived here and were supported by Lena for a long time. And she kept in touch with all those people over the years. Bob Dylan, it was his first tour of the East Coast. He was playing in Greenwich Village at that point. He lived in Greenwich Village, and that's where he played primarily.
Your breath is sweet, your eyes are like two jewels in the sky. Your back is straight, your hair is smooth on the pillow where you lie.
Steve Van Ronk's wife was booking him, and Dave had been playing up here since 1960, and she called up Lena, which was only like 2 or 3 years at that point, but at any rate, she called up Lena and said, I need you to take this kid, Bob Dylan. And Lena didn't want to. She wanted to do something else, but finally she was kind of pressured into doing it, and she agreed to take Bob Dylan, and Bob came up and played, and the room had a bunch of Skidmore kids in it. A bunch of Skidmore kids had come down to see the concert, and some girls were kind of talking and so forth while he was playing. And Lena got up on stage and said, "This kid has something to say, and I want you to listen to him, and I want you to be quiet right now. Give it a try." And
she actually got up on stage and lectured the audience and said, "You know, these are people who are beginning, and imagine what it would be like for you to stand up here with people talking around you. You know," and she gave them a lecture on manners, concert manners, or, you know, not clinking glasses and so on while he was performing. But they just thought it was a joke, and she got very upset about it.
So bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, "This'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die."
I understand that it is. The story that I've heard was that he was booked for a weekend. That used to be in the old days that people were booked for a full weekend at Cafe Lena. They would play Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night. And he was booked for a weekend. I think not for the first time either. And he was a real drinker. And he was up at the Tin and Lint, which is a bar over on Caroline Street. And he was there for the afternoon before his concert. And he was writing on on napkins and so forth. He was writing down this new song, and he came back to his gig at Lena's that night and played the song, and it was American Pie.
Sang this award-winning song, Both Sides Now. We didn't know it by Both Sides Now, because he sang it probably, I want to say, is about as slow as I've ever heard anybody sing a song. He sang every word. He was a magician. Talk about one of the best performers I ever heard. He was. But that song, when we heard it, never did we realize that about a year later, it would become a very popular song by Joni Mitchell, but it was spellbinding. He stopped singing, and no one moved for about 20 seconds. They were spellbound by his rendition, and I've never heard it sung like that again.
In those years, it was more like in the 60s and 70s, it was like one big happy family. Everybody liked everybody pretty much. Everybody cared about what the other people were doing. And there weren't agents like there are now. There were just performers who were moving around the country performing in all of these coffee houses. You know, there were a whole bunch of coffee houses all over the country. So a performer would go from one to another to another to another. The cafe just happens to be the last and only left one of that vintage. I've looked at love from both sides now. She was a mother. She became a mother to many performers.
Humorous evening we have had at Lena's Coffee Bar. You too can enjoy the delights of Lena's Coffee Bar if you listen to 2LO on Yorkshire Slossets. Tomorrow night, listen on the medium wavelength for more knicker-ripping specialities. You too could split your difference if only you come down to Lena's Coffee Bar. Thank you and good night for your sponsor, Hesperus Crint.
At its best around 1970 to 73, and in those days it was very busy, and after the shows people went to the bar next door and they played music all night. Things started to decline 1974, 75, 76, and when I moved to town, Lena was always desperate for money. The salaries. Lena was not taking a salary. She took money for her cigarettes, for her lottery tickets, to buy food, to take a cab across town, to put her laundry in the washer. That's all she ever had. She never took $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000 a year. She probably never took more than $7,000 or $8,000 a year total. And in 1988, she gave up that apartment because they wanted to fix up the apartments. And she moved here, and she slept sitting up for the rest of her life. And she still never had enough money. But all she spent money on were cigarettes, lottery tickets, a little bit of food, not very much. And it was always like that. She was not a businesswoman. She had no idea how to run a business. She had no idea how to maximize her profits, to keep her expenses down. She kept practically no records. The records she kept were a joke. The only record I ever saw was at the end of the night, she'd take one of these notebooks and she'd write down the name of the number of the table and the amount of money that table paid. And she didn't even total it. But if the federal tax people came, she would pull out that book and she'd say, these are my records and I'll tell you how much I made. And then they'd ask her to pay income tax or something. And then she paid the cafe bills, but sometimes she wouldn't be able to pay them and it would get very behind. And then she would get people on the phone like Arlo Guthrie and say, Arlo, oh, things are very bad. I owe a great deal of money. Will you do a concert? And there would be a big concert, and even those concerts never made much money, but they made enough to pay the bills, partly because the performer didn't take any money. She would have nowhere near enough people to run the cafe. So, no, it was getting very hard for her. Her eyesight was absolutely terrible. She could hardly see. with macular degeneration. She was not steady on her feet. She had not taken care of herself. I mean, she hadn't eaten well. She hadn't gone to the doctor. She had nothing. You know, she was very poor, really. But she was poor in a sort of glorious way.
She was rich in people. She had a lot of friends. People cared about her. But really, she wouldn't accept help in any... The kind of help she would accept wasn't... It was never monetary, you know. It wasn't monetary. It was more like, well, I'll come up and I'll help you clean up, or I'll come up and paint the cafe, or I'll come up and cut your toenails. Or there were people who did things for her all the time, but it wasn't monetary. She wanted audience. She was begging us to find her more audience, you know, come back.
Come on, friend, I know you need somebody. Here I am. Don't pretend I see you see me. Please take my hand. I won't hang on too long.
We had Spalding Gray, who was a monologuist. He did a film. She wanted to come. She had Michael Cooney performing there that night. I believe it was Michael. And she got a new dress, and she got new shoes, and she never showed up. I knew she left the cafe. I was holding tickets for Spalding, and we were sold out. And 9 o'clock came, and I knew something had happened to her, because she would never have missed that. She would have been in the front row. And come to find out, as Hattie said, I knew what happened. Miss Lena fell down those stairs. She had those new shoes on, that new dress, and she tripped. And she went.
Take what you need and nothing more. I know.
The night she fell down the stairs at the cafe, Michael Cooney was performing. We have a recording of that night. Michael never wanted us to play it because he was so distraught. He took Lena off in the ambulance, and a friend of ours was in that Well, the ambulance broke down, and they got transferred to another ambulance, and that ambulance was driven.
I see you see me. Take my hand.
And told me that he had taken her to the hospital. And so she was in the hospital. She was in a coma for a few days, never did come out of it.
Twelve years ago, when we started the cafe, I came across a bunch of old 78s, and I found a record called Dear Little Cafe. It was recorded by...
She was the last of the Bohemians.
Offer a place for new performers to come in and try it out and be bad. And what would have happened to Bob Dylan if he hadn't had places like Cafe Lena to perform?
We'll have a sweet little cafe in a neat little square. We'll find our fortune and our happiness there. We will thrive on the vain and resplendent, and contrive to remain independent. Meek reputation and a chic clientele. Things will fall under our spell. We'll be so zealous that the world will be jealous of our sweet little cafe in a square. A neat little square. We'll find our fortune and our happiness there. We will thrive on the vain and resplendent, and contrive to remain independent. We'll have a meek reputation and a chic clientele.